Yahweh tells us that in the last days, he's going to pour out a spirit of reconciliation, a spirit of acceptance that will plead for favor on behalf of Israel, on the household of Dod, which would be Yehuda, and on Jerusalem. He's going to come for his people. And then he says, and it shall come to exist on that day, declares Yahweh, that the names of the objects of worship that are made from the substance of the earth will be cut off, will cease to exist, will be banished, recalled and proclaimed no more. You know, think of all the crucifixes. Think of all of the paintings, and as Kirk pointed out the other day, the paint is pigments in paint are made from dirt, ground earth. It's a religious object of worship. That all of that will be no more. Moreover, he says, I will quickly distance myself from the world of prophets and the intoxicating spirit of uncleanliness and infidelity of religious rebellion. God's not going to associate in any way with those who are religious, nor is he going to be seen in a place that has any religious trappings. You know, the place, Kirk, that so many would say is the place that you go to meet with God, that you go to pray to God, that you go to be with God, is the one place God is telling you, I'm not going to even be on the same planet that this stuff exists.
That's got to shake you up.
Yeah, he's talking about his imminent return. Last days of the tribulation. And he says, you know, I'm going to return to my people, and I'm going to pour out a spirit of acceptance so that my people return to me. That would be Israel. He's talking about Dod, who is the one person that Yahweh said is right in his assessment of the covenant and the Torah. And then the words out of his mouth is that all of the names for God, all of the religious imagery created by man, all of those who claim to speak for God, they're all gone, banished, disassociated.
Well, I liked your example about Eden. I mean, I thought that was classic, or it should become classic. You know, what's in Eden? Is this in Eden? Is this in Eden? No.
No.
Nothing.
No, there's no politics in Eden. There's no religion in Eden. There's no military in Eden. God damn, that commercial that preceded this.
Mm.
I don't know if you were able to listen to it, but it was the Bible stick.
Military Bible stick.
Yeah, that you give to the to some godforsaken member of the U.S. military so they would have peace in battle. Let me tell you something, folks. God does not support the military. You are as unlikely to find him on the battlefield amongst military combatants as you are to find him in a church or a mosque. These are the places you will not find him. By the way, you won't find him in a Bible stick either.
Not with the New Testament.
No. No, and of course they don't want to listen to what they would call the Old Testament, although there is no Old Testament. There's strictly the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But, you know, with their religion, they've discounted that. It no longer applies to them.
Yeah.
Now, they'll find their God in the writings of Paul, who was demon-possessed by his own admission. And it shall come to exist on that day, as Yahweh says, that the names of the objects of worship made by the substance of the earth will be banished, cease to exist, recalled and proclaimed no longer. Moreover, by the way, you know, we've talked about this before, Kirk, but when Yahweh tells us about his return in Hosea, when he's coming back for his people, you know, he divorced himself of Israel and he says, you know, I'm coming back and I will be their God and they will be my children again. He tells us that the name that will no longer be spoken. And the first thing he tells us about the difference between the time before reconciliation and after is that the one name that he will never have to hear again, never have to endure again, is never being called the Lord again.
Mm-hmm. He hates that word.
Hates that name and title, the Lord, because it's so much the antithesis of what he's about. And disassociating, destroying, distancing himself from and destroying from the world. Prophets, men who profess to be spiritual, spokespeople with an authoritative message, and the intoxicating spirit of infidelity. That part there is important, because so often, Kirk, Yahweh is telling us that the problem with Paul is he's intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of, okay, from in our world today, we think of intoxicating as somebody like Steve Sarkisian, the former coach of USC, who showed up to work routinely drunk. And we think of that as intoxicating. And being intoxicated, you know, you're pulled over for being under the influence. But what Yahweh is saying when he talks about intoxication has nothing to do with alcohol. It's used as a metaphor only because of what alcohol does to someone. And alcohol has been is a perfect example, because from the moment we have civilization, you have alcohol. Without alcohol, there is no civilization, because the water would be toxic without alcohol. If you drink too much alcohol, your judgment is impaired. Your ability to make a reasoned response is impaired. And so alcohol is a perfect metaphor, but it's stated as a metaphor. He's talking about the spirit, the ruach of infidelity that is intoxicating. He's talking about Satan and the false prophets who speak for him.
That's what it means by an unclean spirit.
Exactly. So we're talking about those who have been demon-possessed and who speak on behalf of HaSatan, the adversary. The two who admitted that they were demon-possessed and spoke on behalf of HaSatan were goaded by him, therefore controlled by him, are Paul, the founder of Christianity, and Muhammad, the founder of Islam. Both men admitted in their writings, or in the case of Muhammad, who was illiterate, in his speeches, that he was demon-possessed. And Paul, of course, wrote it in 2 Corinthians. I'm demon-possessed. Controlled by Satan.
I was just going to say, if you're a Christian and you're taking your children to Sunday school and church every Sunday, probably mm-hmm. a prayer meeting like they do down south, and you do this over and over from the time they're little babies, and you give them a full dose of Paul every day and week, all during the week, how do you expect them to be anything else?
Right. How do you expect them to respect women when Paul said they should lord over women?
Shut up, yeah. Be not heard in church.
How do you expect them to respect God when Paul called his testimony pornography, when he said that his covenant, his Torah, couldn't save? His testimony was impotent in this regard. How do you expect him to respect God when he discounted everything that God had to say?
Yeah. Where do you find Lord of Lords as a representation of Yahweh? I beg your pardon?
Yeah. And so, you know, what you have here is just societal, society as a whole suspending reason. But here Yahweh is telling you that the unclean spirit of intoxication is religion. You know, prophets exist in religion. Those are the ones that claim to speak for God. And for most of human history, it's been this amalgamation of religion and politics has been inseparable. There really is very little difference in most cultures between religion and politics. And you might say today, you know, that, you know, America was founded on separation of church and state. While that is true, America was founded by men who were admittedly devoted to Freemasonry. And America's national symbols are all based on Freemasonry. And America's national symbols embody the spirit of Rome, which was the ultimate beast, according to Yahweh. And it really hasn't changed. A person's religion is a driving force in their political ambition. So it's...
I don't see any real separation of church and state in this country.
No.
I mean, they're little tiny things, but no, there's no separation
of
church.
Well, particularly, well, there is some degree of separation of church and state because what's happened with political correctness and what's happened with political correctness in particular in academia and the media. We have a new religion.
Yeah.
And political correctness is the moral code of socialist secular humanism, and socialist secular humanism is the national religion of America.
But if you want to get elected, you have to court the religious, the Christian.
You have to feign being a Christian while overtly being a socialist secular humanist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you just announce like who's the African American neurosurgeon Ben Carson. Yeah, he just pull up a sign, I'm a Christian, he's a Seventh-day Adventist, which means he's a really lost Christian. We did a dozen programs on the edicts of the Seventh-day Adventist exposing and condemning that particular sect of Christianity. But if you were going to run on the basis of I'm first and foremost religious, you aren't going to be elected in America today. It's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen because of the fact that America is leaving Christianity in droves.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Catholicism is failing dramatically, which is why the Pope has aligned himself with socialist secular humanism, his own power base.
Don't you think even these mega churches have become secular? I mean, the message is more like think and grow rich.
You're right. Robert Shuler or Chris Long with Rich Warren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the guy down there, there's a bunch of them in Texas that, the big old churches.
Yeah.
It's all feel-goodism and think your way to prosperity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You look at Benny Hinn and his... dinner and a show with the fake healing. So let's believe in false hope. I'm a healer, I'll fix you. And of course, when you ask him, is he actually healed anybody? Of course not. Dinner and a show, it's all a fraud. We'll be back in a moment. Indeed, it should come to pass that anyone who speaks as a prophet, again, his father and mother will say, to the child they bore, you shall not live. For indeed, you speak in the name of Yahweh, and his father and mother, you speak lies, I should say, in the name of Yahweh, and his father and mother, who bore him, shall pierce him when he prophesies. What's interesting here, it says, you shall not live. Well, if the word for live actually was haya, you shall not exist. And it's true. If you're preaching lies in the name of God, you're going to die. You're going to cease to exist. And it says that the mother and father who bore him are going to pierce him, which means they're going to, it's just like you pierce through a lie. They're going to expose him. Pierce through the deception, because those deceptions are important, and the parents are going to be particularly concerned. It gets back to the thing that I said we needed more of in this world is to hate, and because we don't hate enough, the world is in a terrible way. If you don't hate that which is destructive, particularly of your soul and the souls of your children, then there's something fundamentally wrong with you. Because you need to hate that which is destructive and counterproductive and deadly sufficiently to stand up against it. And there's too few people willing to do that. Well, we're going to move into a time where people are just not going to tolerate this kind of stuff. I wish we were in that time right now.
Yeah, I would hear.
On that day, everyone who claims to speak on behalf of a god will be too ashamed to provide their divine message. You're not going to see the Pope stand up and give his blessing at in the Vatican. Be too ashamed. Should be too ashamed now, but, you know, it was pretty telling that this Pope was asking everybody he met with to pray for him. He knows he has no communication with God. That's pretty sad, isn't it?
Well, I think that's a con job, too. I mean, you know, just probably what he says. I don't know if he believes anything other than in himself. He may be just totally, like Paul, just totally into it.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he even believes in himself. You know, based upon studying Bergoglio's past, particularly as he was exiled, and he grew cold and to hate, you know, it's one thing to hate, but you need to be careful of what you hate. You ought to hate that which is destructive, that which is leading people away from God. Now, he was put in exile because he was so self-assured and so fixated on his own power. And the Jesuits realized he was a dangerous man. But still is a dangerous man. But anyway, it says that they will be too ashamed to deceive while dressed in their fine robes and religious cloaks.
That's so telling.
Oh.
I mean, boy,
yeah, those pretense, right?
Garments of magnificent splendor.
Yeah. And didn't Yeshua, when he was condemning the religious people, said, you know, their look in their perfectly clean, you know, costumes, so pure on the outside, and they're nothing but a polluted vessel on the inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the exact same thing that's being communicated here, and it's to the same group of people. It doesn't matter if it's the politician in the pretty suit with a nice tie and shirt, or it's the clown acting, you know, dressed in the religious garb to appear holy. They will ultimately say, listen, I'm not a divine messenger. I'm just an individual who serves the realm of mankind. Boy, that's what they all claim now. They're servants to mankind. But indeed, from his youth, he has made merchandise of mankind, and that's the truth. All of those who claim to serve mankind, you know, if you're in military service, you're making a living by making merchandise of men. I mean, that's the whole industrial military complex of making these weapons that kill people. You're making merchandise out of men.
Sure.
Yeah. And all the religious people who claim to be serving God and serving their fellow man, no. They're making a buck by deceiving.
And they own the property.
Oh, God. So Yahweh is not impressed that they have made merchandise of men. If he is asked, what about those wounded, those injured, those afflicted around you by your own doing? And he will say, their crippling afflictions came by way of my lover's house. Oh, yes, it's the house that they love, the house of love. Aren't we having a loving God who just loves all the little children? We should just love everyone. My lover's house. Isn't it so indicative of political correctness? Love is all you need. You know, this notion is that we should just all be accepting and loving. I mean, my lover's house really sounds to me like political correctness. It sounds like the Christianity of the feel-gooders.
Mm-hmm.
God is love. The God of love. You know, the God of love isn't the God that I know. He's loving, but only to his children. And therefore, since his children are one in a million, he's far more hateful than he is loving. And he needs to be, because those who are not his children are harmful to his children. Harmful to his planet.
Family, yeah.
Harmful to his testimony. You know, they're in opposition to everything that he stood for, everything he did.
And why?
So, you know, so if it's a million to one, you love your children, and they're one in a million,
mm-hmm.
aren't you going to be a lot more hateful than you are loving, no matter how loving you are to your children? In fact, the more loving you are to your children, the more hateful you're going to be.
You know, what would be helpful to people that possibly are listening, you need to look up some of these words and see, or at least read it. as you've broken it down, because these where the words are, a lot of it is broken down, and you see really how serious and how much he Yahweh says about it. And each one of these words don't convey as much, you know, till you read all the other meanings of the words.
Right.
I mean, it just he is just cutting a swath here. I mean, he's more than just a saying ashamed and be deceived.
Yeah. Because it's interesting here that Yahweh, when he's talking about those false prophets, those who speak with authority with this intoxicating spirit, he says, I'm holding the next line of question is he's holding them accountable. He's telling them, but what about those that you inflicted, those you wounded with your words?
Yeah.
This is not a victimless crime. It shows that God is disgusted by those who claim to speak for him, like all the pastors and priests and imams do around the world, of those who claim to speak for him that are misleading others. What about your victims? And you're going to see that the nature of religion, the nature of politics, the perpetrator never takes responsibility. What's the perpetrators do? They say, oh, not my fault. It's the house of love.
Church or my point of view or my...
Yeah, it's my political correctness. It's this house of love. We should just all love and be accepting. It's not my fault. It's political correctness.
And Yah says the savage beatings and utter destructions, quoting you now, and vicious defeat, conquest, subjugation, and ultimate death. That's what you did.
Yeah, that's what you did. Yeah, that's what you did. And I'm going to question you. That's what we all ought to be doing of religious and political and military pontificators. We ought to be doing the same thing that Yah was doing. Questioning them, holding them accountable, being judgmental of them. That's the thing that the world lacks. We're just not willing to expose and condemn, just as Yahweh is doing here. Religious spokespeople, political spokespeople, military spokespeople. He's telling you, cause and consequence, but well, you're saying this is just fine, but what about those that were injured by your false testimony? No, it's not my house. It's political correctness. And then it says that they were burned by the sun. Burned and blinded by the sun. Rendered lifeless. Offering false testimony. You know, they're deploying the weapons of war. This is the Hareb Anwar. In fact, a war is the second word. Raising weapons of war, offering false testimony. They're diseased and lifeless, and they're burned and blinded by the sun. Hareb Anwar. And that all of this is in opposition to the Most High Shepherd. Boy, it doesn't matter what whether it's political correctness, socialist, secular, humanism, and it's environmentalism, where they're blinded by the sun,
mm-hmm.
or it's Christianity, where every aspect of the religion is based on the Babylonian and Roman affinity for the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Blinded by it.
Yeah.
Satan's primary guise, sun god.
And he never, this is Yahweh talking, he never calls himself Lord, does he?
No.
He's the Most High Shepherd, he's the Creator.
Right.
He's Yahweh, he's mm-hmm. the Father.
Yeah. Upon the Most High Shepherd, Al Ra'ah. Ra'ah, by the way, is not just shepherd, but Ra'ah is, and there's two ways to write Ra'ah. One is with the Aleph and one with the Ain. And shepherd with the Aleph. Gives you this notion of God Himself
power.
Being taking the form of the sacrificial lamb, being both the leader and shepherd of the flock and being part of the flock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be shepherding the flock by becoming part of the flock. Ra'ah with the Aleph. And with the Ain, it's the Hebrew word to see, to witness, to perceive, because it has the eye in the middle of it. Against the Most High's mighty man. This is Gerber, the most powerful individual, the Almighty's shepherd. The Most High's most powerful individual is Yahusha. And so what they have done is that Christianity has modeled their Jesus Christ after Dionysus, who was the son of the sun. And what they are doing is they've thereby blinded themselves to Yahusha.
Who he really was.
Yeah.
And what he really said.
Yeah, they've replaced the real Torah observant Yahusha with a Jesus Christ modeled after Dionysus, the son of the sun.
If you translated what Yahusha really said,
mm-hmm.
in the context of where he, who he's quoting, because he's
mm-hmm.
doing exactly what you're doing, he's quoting the Torah,
mm-hmm.
You don't have Christianity.
Right.
They can't coexist.
No. No, in fact, Christianity is based upon the repudiation of the Torah and the replacement of the Old Testament with the New Testament. And Yahusha's first public address says, don't think for a moment that I came to do away with the Torah. I came to fulfill it. Not a single letter or even stroke of a letter of the Hebrew words that make up the Torah is going to be annulled, so long as the heavens and earth exist. And you can't even get out of the first book of the so-called Christian New Testament, even the first opening chapters, before he's destroyed the entire basis of Christianity. And yet there are more Christians than there are anybody else, and it's because they don't pay any attention to the words of Yahusha. They replaced him with a sun god image of Dionysus in their Jesus Christ.
And we're not out on a limb on this stuff. This is
no.
This is about as solid as a rock, right?
Yeah. If you want to talk about who's out on the limb, it's the Christian.
Yeah.
They're burned and blinded by the sun against the Most High Shepherd, against the Most High's mighty individual, who is closely related to and associated with me. You know, that's the other thing that the Christians have been fooled by Paul. Didn't Paul twice say that he was the fullness of the Godhead was somehow upon him? Well, first of all, there is no Godhead.
Oh, did you know?
Yeah. And if the totality of God was upon him, then he would be in the totality of God. And that means that almost everything he said about the Father would have been nonsense. That also means that the earth would have been incinerated. And it would also mean that this Zechariah testimony that says he's coming back undiminished in his power and light would have been ridiculous. And the nature of energy, the nature even of a seven-dimensional construct entering a three-and-a-half-dimensional realm, if he did not diminish himself, if he didn't follow the laws of physics and diminish himself at E equals MC squared,
has to blow up.
The entire Earth would have blown up. The solar system would have blown up.
Earth, yeah.
The Milky Way galaxy would have blown up. So, folks, you've just been deceived. You've been absolutely lied to, and it's appropriate to listen to what Yahweh has to say. He says that the shepherd and the mighty individual are related to and associated with him. That means that Yahusha is set apart from Yahweh. It's part of Yahweh, just a tiny, tiny part of Yahweh, set apart from him. And set apart twice, set apart a tiny aspect of Yahweh, and then set apart from spiritual energy to material form. And even at the point he's fulfilling Pesach, that aspect of Yahusha that actually had some of Yahweh associated with him left him by his own admission. My God, why have you forsaken me? So he says that Yahusha is closely related to and associated with him. He's not him. You know, Yahusha is part of Yahweh. But that does not make Yahusha all of Yahweh by any stretch of the imagination.
Nor does it make him a replacement God like Dionysus.
Correct.
God don't die.
Yes, correct. Yeah, God could not die for your sins because God cannot die. Muster the conscripts and engage in battle against the one leading, the one ruling, the one doing the teaching, so that the flock scatters. Then I will use my power to restore the Most High's little ones. So this is Shabbat. The individuals that are being mustered are the Yahweh's spiritual envoys. And so he is mustering his tools. You know, there's no such thing as an angel. But the spiritual envoys are heavenly messengers, and they are in a command and control regimen. They have no choice. They do what they're told. He says they're going to muster them to engage in battle, and they're going to engage against the societal leaders, the societal shepherds, those who are rulers, those who are teachers, all to scatter the flock. And then he says, once that happens, he says he's going to use his hand, his power, to restore his little ones, his sa'ar. So the insignificant become his children. That's what he's all about. And he wants it to be done with separation. They will be separated and then spared. So, Kirk, this last statement is really interesting. So, Yahweh is telling his spiritual messengers, his envoys, to go out against, in opposition to society's leaders, society's teachers, those in charge. And he wants to do it so that the flock is scattered. And then only after there is separation that he's going to use his power to restore his little ones. So rather than God saying, I want to go save everyone, all the little children, come to me. No. First thing he's doing is, let's create separation. I'm not interested in saving those who will associate with society's leaders.
It's very telling, isn't it?
Yes.
Right back to Abraham. Get away
exactly.
From
Get away from those people. Separate from those people. By the way, there's this clip that Scott played for me during the break. I'd like you to listen to it. This is from Reverend Wright, Christian minister. Yeah, this is what he has to say. I'll let you comment on it because I might use inappropriate words.
Remember, Jesus was a Palestinian.
Jesus was what?
Well, Jesus was a Palestinian.
Oh, Palestinian, was he? Oh.
Yeah, first of all,
Jesus was a Palestinian.
First of all, Jesus was a Palestinian.
Well, yeah. First of all, was there a person named Jesus?
No. And was Palestine a name used before the Romans dubbed the Promised Land?
No. In fact, Palestine, Philistina, wasn't created as a mythological name for the province of Yehuda until 135 CE. So even if you were to ascribe to the Roman misnomer, which was promoted by Hadrian, who is probably among the five most despised people in the history of mankind, the Roman emperor, who wanted to name Jerusalem after himself and put a giant shrine to himself on the top of the Temple Mount. He's the one that came up with the name, and he came up with the name because he says, you know, the Jews in their Torah had this enemy called the Philistines, so I'm going to rename this place. Instead of the province of Yehuda, we're going to name it Philistina, off of these long extinct people. Now, didn't Dode describe him as, you know, this uncircumcised Philistine when he's talking about Goliath?
Yeah.
And aren't we told repeatedly that Yosha would be a descendant of Dode, who was not just a Yisraelite, but of the tribe of Yehuda?
Mm-hmm.
So when a Reverend Wright makes a statement that stupid, why isn't that he is discredited and laughed off the face of the planet?
My children are lost.
Yeah. Because of stupidity.
As you proceed, Jackie wrote me back and said and mentioned Yeshaya 57, 1 and 2. So last night I translated that as best I could and looked up a lot of stuff. And as you get into this really heavy stuff that's about to follow the last verse you just did, it gets so ugly. Mm-hmm. In the last days, I mean, this is horrible, horrible what's about to happen to the world, as we all know.
Is there any reason that Yahweh will disassociate from and will destroy those who claim to speak for God, like Reverend Wright with his Jesus was a Palestinian?
He'll have absolutely no part in
him. Yeah. And, you know, the reason he's saying that is because Reverend Wright hates Jews. He's an anti-Semite. And so I'm going to lie because the lie is popular.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I was going to mention is what I did in the column of this. I wrote, C 57, 1 and 2 for the Great Escape.
Yeah.
Because that's really about Teruah. There is a way to get out of there and not have to go through this stuff, but...
Oh, man, you don't want to be here because the mentality of the Reverend Wrights are going to be embraced because the vast preponderance of people are apathetic. They lack knowledge. They don't understand the Torah. They don't know Yahweh. They're clueless. They've had the whole concept of exercising good judgment drummed out of them by the national religion of love, of political correctness.
They don't want to know. They don't want to know. If they wanted to know, they'd find the answer.
You know, I think that the average Christian would adhere to that because they don't want their Jesus to be Jewish either.
That's true. Absolutely true.
They most certainly don't want him to be Torah observant. Not their Jesus.
No, they don't want to give up Christmas.
Right. So he must be a Philistine. At least to the Christian mindset.
That's sad.
We'll be back tomorrow. Exposing lies and heralding the truth.